Good morning. It's 8:45, primary day. Now just 1 week away. All this week, WFIR speaking with each of the Democratic and Republican candidates for governor today. Former Democratic Congressman Tom Perriello joins Evan Jones and me live by telephone. Mr. Perriello, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Nice to have you with us this morning. We'll get right to it here. And you have come out, Tom, as opposed to either of the proposed natural gas pipelines across Virginia. Governor McAuliffe and labor unions that generally support Democrats are among those who say the pipelines will create some needed high-paying jobs. Is an opposition to these pipelines a potential job killer?
Exactly the opposite. This is a 50-year job-killing investment in Virginia because it's an investment in monopolies. Monopolies are what's killing jobs across Virginia, particularly across the Valley and rural Virginia. We shouldn't be living today in a place where one company that happens to be the largest contributor to both political parties in Richmond gets to decide which fuel we're going to use, how we're going to extract it, whose property rights got over in order to tell us how much we need to pay for it. The jobs of the future are in distributed energy, whether that's methane capture, solar, and energy efficiency and weatherization. There's 75 permanent jobs created by this $6.7 billion investment. Now, I want to build. I want our trade unions and carpenters going to work. That's why I'm pro-infrastructure and make those investments. But making a $6.7 billion investment right now in this old, outdated technology is like betting our pension funds 15 years ago on Eastman Kodak right as digital cameras are taking off. We need someone that understands where the real jobs are, where the real growth is, and can put those same construction crews to work, but doing so on things that are actually going to not just reward the monopolies in Richmond.
Mr. Perriello, good morning. This is Evan Jones. You propose a taxpayer-paid pre-kindergarten and community college and tax increases for wealthier Virginians as one way to help pay for it. Now, given the economic condition of many higher-tax states, can you be sure an increase in taxes will actually bring in more income? Isn't that the record in some states it does the opposite?
No, quite the contrary. What we do is combine spending cuts that we're specific about, closing of unfair tax loopholes that benefit monopolies and big corporations, and asking those making $1 million a year to pay a little more to invest in education and infrastructure, including 2 years of free community college, trade school, or apprenticeship program. Why? Because this moves more people into the working class, middle class. So conservatives who are irritated that not enough people are paying income tax, one of the reasons for that is we don't have enough pathways that are affordable into the kind of career-paying jobs where people are paying taxes instead of collecting public assistance. So the trickle-down approach of the right that we've tried for the last 30 years, the evidence is very, very clear. Those tax cuts for the rich kill growth. They kill growth in the middle class and create consolidation at the top. So we need a real growth strategy, and that growth strategy, just like every business in America, comes from being willing to invest. And asking those making $1 million a year to pay a little bit more so that we can invest in education, workforce training, and infrastructure to create the jobs in the middle class of the future is exactly what we need, and all of the evidence points to that. We've just been told this myth of trickle-down for 30 years.
We are speaking with former Congressman and Democratic candidate for governor, Tom Perriello. Primary day is 1 week from today. Now, critics of historic monuments like the Lee and Jackson statues in your native Charlottesville say that, well, you just can't remove history. You've expressed support for removing them. But Congressman, former Congressman Perriello, where do you draw the line? What are the defining characteristics of which historic figures are worthy of memorials and which are not?
Well, I see this really as kind of an exciting opportunity. Other people see this as a very negative thing, but there's a reason that so many of us love watching the History Channel. Our history here in Virginia is fascinating. The more that we understand it, the more completely we understand it from all perspectives. It's like putting the pieces of a puzzle together. And I've worked as a peace negotiator in Africa and Afghanistan and other places. I've been part of a conversation about race since I was very young in Virginia. And it's exciting for me to think about the fact that when we talk about the Civil War, we keep in mind that in Charlottesville and Albemarle County, where I'm from, a majority of human beings at the time were black, and their experience of the Civil War is also part of our history. We in Virginia are the birthplace of American democracy. We're also the birthplace of American slavery. And in each generation, we've decided how much one or the other of those defines our future. And the conversation, the process of having these conversations, whether it's about our memorials, how we celebrate holidays, but also how we look at current issues of structural inequality, are really an important part of how democracy functions. This is how Truth and Reconciliation Commissions have worked, and we've proposed something along those lines, not to be seen as a contentious thing, but actually a really fun opportunity for us to come together and continue to understand our past in a way that will give us a brighter future. So the process itself is very, very important in understanding these parts of our history, and I think we should see it as a really fun, great opportunity to come together.
We are speaking with Democratic candidate for Governor Tom Perriello this morning on the Roanoke Valley's Morning News. Mr. Perriello, some of your critics within your party have noted that you once accepted money from the National Rifle Association and voted for pro-life legislation. So how do you now seek the votes of those critics?
Well, I've always been pro-choice. I had a 17% rating from the Right to Life group in Congress. I supported Planned Parenthood funding. I've continued to do work on supporting women's rights both before and after I was in Congress. I did take a vote that limited taxpayer funding for abortion in the Affordable Care Act bill, which was a promise I made to my constituents. And as you may know, my constituents represented a broad range politically of views and felt like that was the right balance at the time. I've expressed regret for that pledge, but I did feel like when I promised something to my constituents, I should meet it. On the gun issue, I do support a Second Amendment right to bear arms, but I do think that's consistent with common sense reforms like universal background checks. Without that, there's simply no way to know whether a mass murderer is buying a weapon or an entire arsenal. And looking at these common sense reforms, I think, are something we can do consistent with our heritage and consistent with our Second Amendment. So I think if you look over my lifetime to the last 20 years, most of it has been leading nonprofit organizations fighting for reducing poverty, addressing climate change, looking at racial reconciliation efforts, trying to improve economic development, including in the clean energy space. And I can tell you that the times that I went bold are the times I don't regret. And that includes the votes for the Affordable Care Act, for the climate change bill, for the Stimulus Act, the Preventative Depression, for the DREAM Act, and hate crimes legislation. And those are the kinds of things that I want to build on as governor and find a way to bring us together. And, you know, I'm pretty rare in politics because I've actually spent more of my life as a peace negotiator than as a politician. And part of what that means is that you go out and you listen to all sides. You let people know what your views are, but you do a lot of listening. And if you look at things like our program, the first of its kind, for free community college, trade school, and apprenticeship programs, that's because it was something I was hearing not just from communities of color across Virginia and parts of my own coalition, but what I was hearing in a lot of Trump country out in Southside and Southwest Virginia. So we really put together a plan in terms of challenging monopolies and creating those pathways into the trade that we believe actually can bring us together across regional and racial lines.
Mr. Perriello, you mentioned in part of that answer common sense reforms. Along that very line, Virginia has a recent record of statewide Democratic victories. Mark Warner, Tim Kaine, Terry McAuliffe, all have portrayed themselves using the term common sense as common sense moderates. You've welcomed support from senators like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, who I think by their own definitions would not call themselves moderates. But do you see Virginia as a moderate state or one more in line with these two senators?
I see it as a common sense state. And I think what people are looking for is solutions that actually solve the problems that we face. And when we have one of the highest levels of student debt in the country, when people coming out of college have an average of $35,000 of student debt, finding a completely new way to finance our university system is bold, but it's also common sense. Because when we so gravely disincentivize people moving into community college or higher education, we all end up paying a price for it. The same thing for criminal justice reform. For incarcerating someone for a decade, it cost taxpayers $300,000. And that could be even for a simple step of stealing a cell phone. Now, none of us want people doing that, but whether we think it's more common sense to find ways to invest in prevention and to create better pathways into jobs, than this over-incarceration that I think my friends on both the right and on the left think is ridiculous in terms of how we've gone about doing this. We need to treat addiction as a disease and not as a criminal problem. And these are things I'm hearing deep into Trump country. So I think the old definition is an artificial one. I think what people are looking for are smart ideas that make sense and solve problems. And I think the definition of what that is has changed a lot from the time that I spent both in red and blue parts of the state. So that's what I think people are looking for, is not the same old regurgitated ideas that both parties have from the 1990s where they can stake out the same two sides in the argument. People are saying, you're not hearing us. That old economy isn't working anymore. We have too much consumer debt and student debt. We don't have enough of these pathways into the middle class. The monopolies have consolidated too much power. And I think this is about what the next generation of ideas looks like. And that's why we've been able to draw support both from the chair of Hillary Clinton's campaign and Sanders and Warren and 30 of Barack Obama's top senior advisors. We're really uniting, I think, the next generation of the party around things that actually affect people's lives at the kitchen table.
Primary day, 1 week from today, former Democratic congressman and now candidate for governor, Tom Perriello, with us this morning. Mr. Perriello, we appreciate your time, and thank you for coming on and talk with us.
Thank you so much. I really hope everyone gets out next Tuesday, June 13th, to vote. It's a big deal, and we really hope people will participate.